Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Ask not.
The Beatles.
Circus is on the air.
When the president does it.
Sometimes you feel like a...
That means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you
tear down this wall.
Here's Jennings.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
John's been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
All right, Dave Schwann. So we do this on our show every week.
You're looking at me and you're all right, Dave Schwann.
We do this
Let's
every week on our show.
Got.
A little history here. I thought we'd talk about history of Christmas in Chicago. I think one of the biggest traditions for people are going to what was Marshall Field's and Macy's, of course. And the holiday windows turned 51 this year. The holiday windows trace back to the history to the early days of Marshall Field's when the store was founded in 1852. As a dry goods business. A few years later, in 1897, Field's new display manager, Arthur Fraser, pioneered window design. His Christmas toy windows were especially enthralling. These windows continued through World War II, and during the war, a new idea struck the visual team, a plan that would make Marshall Field's as unforgettable as Santa. So they designed themed windows that spanned the length of State Street. I almost think they used to wrap around the building at some point.
And well, they would tell the story. They're on the north side of the building.
They're on the north.
In addition to the west side.
But they used to start kind of on the, they used to start on the north side. Yeah. Wrap around. Now they're just on State Street.
Yeah.
Yeah, just in the windows. And I think this year they're celebrating little parts and pieces of things that they found.
There were a few on the north side, though, this year.
Was there? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And
I have to say, it is still terrific to see the kids getting excited about looking at this instead of looking at their phone.
At their phone?
Yeah.
Emma. No, looking at your phone.
Oh, yes, she is. There it is.
Yeah, she's on it. She's waiting for the sunset over here at the studio. Okay, also 1946 was Marshall Field's introduced Uncle Mistletoe, which is kind of lost to audiences today. But, Montgomery Ward had Rudolph, which we'll talk about, but Marshall Field's had Uncle Mistletoe. So they created this little adventure. It was a TV series as well, and that became the icon. Actually, Uncle Mistletoe is on the great tree in the Walnut Room this year, which is also a tradition. The Walnut Room has been open since 1907.
Wow.
Which is
I didn't know
crazy,
it went
right?
back that long.
Yeah. It was a tea room made famous by Mrs. Herring's chicken pot pie in the late 1890s, becoming the very first restaurant in a department store anywhere. The restaurant adorned with Circassian wood imported from Russia and Austria and became a tradition of dining, especially around the holidays. I've done that all my life. We go every year, right, Emma?
Yes.
That's right. Still on our phone over there. Dave Schwann?
No.
Yeah, not every year, but
every
certainly,
year.
You know, a number of times. I have to tell you, I had a free afternoon a few weeks ago, and I've always loved going through Marshall Field's at this time of year and their Christmas department.
Yeah.
They moved the Christmas department, or most of it, onto the same floor as the Walnut Room and candies this
right.
year. What they had this year, though, was really, really neat to see. An actual recreation of the Norman Rockwell painting of the Marshall Field's clock.
Oh, that's right.
With the,
sitting
the
in the hallway.
The clock repairman checking the time. He's up on the ladder
right.
and he's sitting there and he's looking at his pocket watch, fixing the clock and setting it at the right time.
It's a beautiful portrait.
But I love that painting.
Yeah.
And they have a recreation of it there. So it's kind of three-dimensional. When
That's
you look
cool.
at it, as well as an explanation as to how the clock came to be, where Marshall Field himself became aware of the fact that people were tucking notes
in
the corner
the
of the
stone.
Building saying,
stone,
you know that.
I do.
And that, got the idea for putting up a clock where people could meet as a landmark.
Meet me under the clock.
Meet me under the clock at Marshall Fields. Led to the Norman Rockwell painting. Led to not Chicago history, but American history.
I love that. Absolutely cool. Also in Marshall Fields, Frango turns 100 this year.
Oh, really?
The Frango Mint, yeah.
I sent Frango Mints out to my friends in L.A.
At the beginning of the Great Depression, Chicago-based Marshall Fields purchased Frederick and Nelson and its beloved Frango recipe. So it was 1918 that Frederick Nelson, back in Seattle, created Frango. But when Marshall Fields bought them in 1929, they were able pick up the brand and so forth. There's a great Frango ice cream pie in the Walnut Room that you can have. Good stuff. Chicago's first official Christmas tree was brought over by these Christmas tree ships. Talk to me a little bit about that.
That was a business that was begun in the 19th century, prior to the heyday of rail travel, you know, before the railroads were complete, and shipping was done by boats. And one of the biggest reasons why Chicago became the shipping center for the world is because of what we can look at right out of our window,
sure,
Dave, the Chicago River and going into Lake Michigan and thus from there out to the world. And in addition to, you know, shipping and meatpacking, and I've got a connection to meatpacking and Christmas here in just a moment in Chicago.
Sure.
Were a number of ships that would go up north. It was part of the lumber industry where they would go up north to northern Wisconsin, northern Michigan, and get trees that had been harvested for lumber, bring them back down here for milling, and thus being shipped out. Well, the Christmas tree business caught on, and one of the boats that was involved with that was called the Rouse Simmons. It was made in Milwaukee in the late 1860s and named for a Milwaukee businessman, Rouse Simmons.
Oh, okay.
Eventually purchased by a man by the name of Schunemann, August and Hermann Schunemann.
That name sounds familiar to me, right? Because they really started that tradition here.
To bring in Christmas trees from northern Michigan, and they went up there. We're talking the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. It took a week for that boat to get back from northern Michigan.
But that was tradition to get it. People would wait for that
every
boat to arrive, right?
They would wait for it, and they would tie up a Christmas tree to the mast of this three-masted schooner. That must have been an amazing sight to see coming down Lake Michigan. And bringing in upwards of 5,500 Christmas trees every year.
Wow.
And they would sell them at the Clark Street Bridge.
Look at that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
They would sell them at the Clark Street Bridge for 50 cents or up to a dollar.
50 cents.
Hermann Schunemann, the captain, was known as Captain Santa.
And that's cool.
And the trees were left over, he would give away to poorer families that couldn't afford 50 cents or a dollar.
That's cool.
And that was an average
giving
wage
back pretty
then.
Important.
If you made a dollar an hour 100 years ago, that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well, in November of 1912, they were coming back from Manistique, Michigan, northern Michigan, and they hit a bad storm. They had their usual cargo of 5,500 trees or so, and the storms just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And around Two Rivers, Wisconsin, which is a little bit north of Manitowoc, they just hit a terrible storm. Additional ice, which froze on the trees, thus making them heavier.
Yeah.
And the boat sank off of Two Rivers, Wisconsin, November 25th of that year.
Wow.
So they were about halfway here, and that was the last of it. The Christmas tree shipping business by boat ended around 1920.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. Montgomery Ward, another one here, was one of the giants of Chicago's retail industry. You actually can still shop at Montgomery Ward at wards.com. Yep. I didn't know it was still out there, but it is out there. In 1930s, the company expanded beyond its initial mail order business. A copywriter named Robert L. May was commissioned to create a new children's book.
You took my story.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's Rudolph. He created Rudolph.
That's right.
But instead of buying a character, they decided to kind of create their own. Yeah. And I have a friend of mine that collects, like, Rudolph stuff since the beginning of time. And the funny thing about that is, after Rudolph became popular, Montgomery Ward gave the rights back to Robert L. May and their family. And they own, and I think they sold it at some point, but they own the rights for it for decades.
You may be aware of this, but May said in an interview that he got the whole idea for Rudolph being an outcast because when he was a little boy, he was frail and unable to compete in sports and never chosen
probably
to play in the games.
Right?
Well, where do you hear that?
Yeah.
All the other reindeer wouldn't used to laugh and call him names.
Gene Autry singing that.
But he would take his daughter to the Lincoln Park Zoo, and she loved the reindeer. And he got the idea. I said, well, if my daughter likes it, kids must, in general, like this.
Isn't that crazy where the inspiration comes from?
Yeah, and Gene Autry, of course, as you mentioned, the song became a big hit. It was offered to Bing Crosby, who turned it down.
Wow, look at that. Look at that. And that was like 1939 or something.
49.
We have a texter, 773, who's got a piece of history. 200-year anniversary. It's a 200th-year anniversary of the first singing of the beloved Christmas carol, Silent Night, in a chapel in Austria.
Franz Gruber.
Look at
wrote
you.
The Silent Night. He was the organist and music director of the little chapel there and wrote it for their Christmas Eve Mass.
You're amazing to me. Dave Schwann, everybody. All right, we're going to talk to the folks at Navy Pier after a look at your morning traffic. Jen?